Vishat, from poison. Maha Agnihi, from the great fire. Purusha Ada, the man eaters. Darshanat, by combating. Asat, vicious. Sabhayaha, assembly. Vanavasa, exiled to the forest. Kurchataha, sufferings. Murde, again and again in battle. Aneka, many. Mahagatha, great generals. Astrataha, weapons. Drauni, the son of Dronacharya. Astrataha, from the weapon of. Cha, end. Asma, indicating past tense. Hare, O my Lord. Abhirakshitaha, protected completely. Translation: My dear Krishna, your Lordship has protected us from poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from weapon of Ashwatthama.
The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother, otherwise she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They were put into trouble by Duryodhana and his party due to the kingdom, and each and every time the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once they were put into the house made of silk and set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhana's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon Himba Rakshasa, but the Lord saved him. So it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there were the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was a Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendants of the Kurus, Maharaj Parishit.
Hare Krishna. In today's verse, the verse explains about different instances where Krishna has saved and protected his devotees. I won't go into the details of each of the instances, but what I'm going to talk is, I'm going to focus on the main theme of the verse, that Krishna is the protector and savior of the devotees. So in today's class, I'm going to divide it into four sections. We are going to see four different sections where Krishna is source of everything in a devotee's life. First, we are going to see Krishna as our source of our maintenance. Second, the source of our protection. Third, Krishna is the ultimate doer. And finally, Krishna is the source for our deliverance. Okay, let's look at the first thing. Krishna is the maintainer. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a nice story of a hunter by the name of Murgari. Murgari means the enemy of an animal. So this hunter had a very unique way of killing animals, where he will half kill the animal and make the animal to suffer till it dies. So one time Narada Muni was passing through the forest, and he saw all these animals, half dead animals, and Narada felt very compassionate towards the animals. And when he approached Murgari, Initially, Mugabe was a bit angry because Narada disturbed his work, but eventually he became pacified. And then they conversed, and Narada Muni asked him, "Why are you killing the animals like this?" And Mugabe gave two answers. First, he told, "This is his only source of maintenance. This is the profession which he has learned from his father, and this is he's using this to maintain his family." And second reason, he also told that he gets some pleasure looking at animals suffering. So when they further conversed, Narada asked him, "Can I ask something from you?" And Mugabe was very happy. He told, "What do you want?" "I have the meat of various animals. Which meat do you want? Or do you want the skin of the animals?" Narada told, "No, I don't want all this. I want you to give up one habit. If you want to kill them completely. Don't half kill." This opened the eyes of Mugabe, because he never had the idea what is sin. When Narada Muni told this, then he started inquiring more from Narada. What is the difference between sinful activities and non-sinful activities? And eventually Mugabe surrendered and became a disciple of Narada. And finally Narada Muni instructed him, break your bow and give up this habit of hunting. Then Mugabe asked him, "If I give up the habit of hunting, who is going to maintain my family?" Narada told him, "Don't worry about your maintenance. It will be taken care of. You just give up this habit." With the faith of Narada, Mugabe gave up the habit of hunting. And then after some time, Narada Muni together with another person, Parvata Muni, they walked through the same forest. And from far, they saw someone dancing. And they went nearer and they saw Mugabe was dancing. And Narada asked, "You, since when you started dancing?" And Mugabe told what happened. What happened was there were some ants on the floor, and Mugabe was trying to avoid the ants, and so he appears to be dancing. So Parvata Muni was so surprised. He knew that this hunter was such a cruel person, and now he doesn't even want to kill an ant, and he glorified Narada for his mercy. And then Narada asked him, "So how's your family? Are you being maintained?" He told, there was some arrangement. So Mugabe told, "There's absolutely no problem. The only thing I'm requesting from you is, I'm getting too much supply. Just give me what I need." So then Narada Muni told something very important. Prabhupada mentioned this in the purport, and he emphasized this. Okay, he said that the source of our income is not the source of our maintenance. I repeat it. The source of our income is not the source of our maintenance. Okay, what does this mean? Okay, this does not mean that we should give up our duty, okay, but it simply means that we should not depend on our work or whatever duty we are performing for our maintenance. Our maintenance is taken care of Krishna, and we should be only dependent on Krishna for our maintenance. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Karmani eva adhikaraste ma palesu kadachana ma karma hetu ma karma phala etobo mate sangha stva karmani." Krishna is telling, you have the right to perform your duty. Do not become attached for not performing your duty. But at the same time, don't become dependent on the results of your activities. So this is very important. As devotees, we may work and we may earn. That's fine. But at the back of our mind, we must always remember that the only maintainer is Krishna, not the work or the income we are getting. Krishna is the only one maintaining us. Then what is the purpose we are working? The purpose of all activity is to please Krishna. Samside Hari Tosanam. So a devotee works as an offering to Krishna. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what's the verse? Whatever you do, whatever yat karoshi yat asnashi tat kuruswa madharpanam. Krishna says, whatever you do it an offering to me. So it's a difficult step, but as devotees, eventually one should slowly try to see whatever work one is doing as an offering to Krishna, and see Krishna as our only maintainer, and not to see our work as what maintains us. Okay. Now this brings us to another point. If sometimes people ask, if we don't see work as what maintains us, we don't have the motivation to work, because the reason we want to work is someone is dependent on us and we are dependent on the work. But if we are working for Krishna, Krishna is not really dependent on our work, then what is the motivation to work? Anyone wants to answer? Any? Yes, Chaitanya Mataji told. One devotee gave this example, I just repeat. Like, if we have someone whom we really love and we want to give a flower to the person, will we give a crumpled flower which is half decomposed, or we will give a very fresh, nice looking flower? We'll obviously give a good flower. So similarly, if we are working for Krishna and we are going to offer our work to Krishna, then that work should be done to the best of our ability, and it must be of the best quality. Then we offer that work to Krishna. So this is the motivation that a devotee should have to perform while performing his duty. Okay, so this is the first thing. Krishna is the maintainer. Now we see at the second thing, Krishna is the protector. So one time in Dwaraka, Lord Krishna was having his meal, and Rukmini Mata was serving Krishna, and all of a sudden Krishna stood up. Rukmini Mata was a bit bewildered, but she just continued serving. And then after a few while, Krishna sat back, and then Rukmini Mata became more bewildered, and she asked Krishna, "Why did you stand up all of a sudden and then you sat back?" And Krishna told, "While I was having this meal, there was a devotee of mine in earth. He was walking, and there was a fierce dog which was about to attack him. So I stood up to go and help him." Then Rukmini Devi thought, yeah, that's a good reason. Krishna is always concerned about his devotees. Then she was about to serve, and she asked him again, "Then why are you sitting down? Why are you not going and helping him?" And Krishna told, when I was about to go and help him, my devotee picked a stone and started attacking the dog. So now I'm confused, where's the devotee and where's the dog? So this story doesn't mean that we should not defend ourselves, but what the main thing of the story is that what we do, whenever we have a problem, we have to find a solution. But what's important is what we do in between the problem and solution. That which makes the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee is that a devotee would want to take the blessings of Krishna, remember Krishna, and then we do the whatever we need to do. This is shown another point is that if we develop this habit of taking the blessings of Krishna, even in an emergency situation, it's not some elaborate process. Even in an emergency situation, Krishna will give us the ability. Within a split second, we can remember Krishna and then do what we need to do. So that is a very important consciousness to develop. In Bhagavatam, just in the 7th chapter, we saw Ashwatthama released the Brahmastra to Arjuna. So when Ashwatthama released the Brahmastra to Arjuna, Arjuna did not immediately react. What he did? He turned to Krishna and he prayed, "Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam, Abhyankara, Twameko, Dhyamananam, Aparvargosi, Samskrite." So Arjuna is praying, "Krishna, you are the Almighty. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Bhaktanam, Abhyankara, and you are the only one who can free the devotees from the fear." And I like this line a lot, Bhaktanam, Abhyankara, because if you look at our life, It's basically motivated by fear. We wake up, we go to work, everything because we are fearful of something. We want something to happen. So here Arjuna is telling that Krishna can deliver the devotee from all this fear. And then he says, "Twam eko dayamananam apavargosi samskrite." Only you have the ability to free one from all difficulties and free them from all miseries. So Arjuna prayed like this to Krishna, then he circumambulated Krishna. And then Krishna, with Krishna's blessings, he counteracted Ashwatthama's Brahmastra and he became successful. So this is the example that we should follow. Whenever we have any problems, rather than immediately reacting to the problems, we should take a while, take blessings from Krishna, remember Krishna, and then do what is necessary to be done. If we do like that, then we will be successful. And the real success is in the fact that we have remembered Krishna. Okay, now we'll look at the third point. Krishna is the ultimate doer of all activities. In the chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna showed the universal form to Arjuna. And after showing the universal form, Krishna showed to Arjuna in the universal form that he has actually killed all the soldiers. So, and then Krishna said, "Arjuna, Mayai Vaite Nihita Purva Meva." Oh my dear Arjuna, I have actually killed all these soldiers. Then Arjuna must be wondering, if you have killed all these soldiers, then what am I doing here? Why are you asking me to fight? So Krishna said, Nimitta Matram Bhava Savya Sachin. Krishna told Arjuna, you may be a great archer, Savya Sachin, but here just do one thing, Nimitta Matram Bhava, just become an instrument. So this is very important in devotional service, to understand the idea that we are an instrument in Krishna's hand. Whatever service we are doing is nothing but an opportunity that is given by Krishna to engage us as an instrument in His mission. So, as devotees, we must be always grateful to whatever service that we get, whatever opportunity to serve. Not that we feel others should be grateful to me because I am serving them. Okay? And this idea, this understanding, if we have this understanding that we are an instrument and Krishna is the doer, then our devotional service can become very simple. Otherwise, sometimes devotional service can become, the devotional life can appear to be very complicated. Okay, so before I elaborate on this point, I'll explain what is the meaning of being an instrument and what is the implication of being an instrument. Okay, let's say today evening I go back home and then I take a pen and I write a wonderful poem. And then tomorrow I publish the poem. Everyone is so impressed by the poem, and it came out in the national newspaper and everyone liked it so much, and they want to give an award to me. They want to give an award to the person who produced the poem. Now the award should go to whom? To me, isn't it? Not to the pen which I used to write the poem. So that is the meaning of being an instrument. We are simply like the pen in Krishna's hand. Therefore, when whatever credit comes, we should know it should go to Krishna. And we should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. This is the definition Prabhupada gave for humility. In 13.8 of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said, humility means not to be anxious to have the satisfaction to be honored by others. So that is the first and the most important implication of understanding that we are an instrument. If we are an instrument, then Krishna is the doer, and therefore all glories should go to Krishna. And humility, let's look at what is humility. Humility does not mean to feel weak or to feel low, to feel that ourself is useless. That is not humility. Humility means to understand that Krishna is the doer and to have full confidence in Krishna and to have the high self-esteem that I am an instrument in Krishna's hand. Okay. To illustrate this, I'll read. Okay, when Prabhupada was traveling to US in the Jaladutta, in his letter, Prabhupada said the following. This is one of the prayers. Prabhupada said, how will I make them understand this message of Krishna consciousness? I am very unfortunate, unqualified, and the most fallen. I am powerless to do anything my own. Now, my Lord, it is up to you to make me a success or failure as you like. This is Prabhupada's prayers. And if a material motivationalist would read this prayer, they would immediately say that this person is going to be the greatest failure because he doesn't even have confidence in himself. But we all know that Prabhupada succeeded so much beyond the dream of any of these materialists. They can't even imagine Prabhupada's success. This is because Prabhupada had the humility. This is the power of the humility. For a devotee, the secret of success is to have the humility. And what is humility? Okay, I just would like to repeat. It's not about feeling low about ourselves. Okay. But humility is actually to have a very, very high confidence in Krishna's ability and consider ourselves as an instrument in Krishna's hand. Therefore, a devotee he knows that he can do anything and everything if Krishna wants it to happen. Okay. In fact, I want to add one more thing. Very often, as human beings have this attitude of defensive attitude when they feel insecure. So, sometimes the attitude of being arrogant, pride, it may superficially seem someone who's arrogant, like they have a lot of self-confidence, self-esteem. But if you really look, very often they lack self-confidence, they lack self-esteem. And just to defend and to, because they feel insecure, they need to show, make a show of it, and that is why they act like that. Whereas a person, even materially, when they are confident, very often they are quite humble. But the real humility is what we find in devotees, because they have the absolute confidence in Krishna. There's one more verse. I couldn't find the verse. I know it's in second canto, Lord Brahma's prayers, where Lord Brahma said that whatever I speak has never been proven wrong, because I'm tightly holding on the lotus feet of Krishna, something like that. So even this verse, if you look at it superficially, it may seem Lord Brahma is quite proud about himself, but actually that is humility, because he doesn't feel that whatever I say is perfect because I'm perfect. He says because I'm holding on Krishna's feet. So that is the real meaning of humility, to understand that Krishna is the doer. So this attitude that Krishna is the doer and I'm an instrument is the very important basis in our devotional service. And as I told initially, we often hear devotional service is simple. It will remain simple as long as we understand this, that Krishna is doing, I'm just his instrument. If we miss this point and we start to think that the whole world is revolving because of me and mine, then we'll find eventually our devotional life will become more and more complicated. Okay, we'll start coming out with so many arguments why things are happening like this, why things are not happening in the way I want, and the so-called devotional service will not be simple and blissful. Okay, but if we understand that Krishna is doing everything, then we know that whatever is happening is nothing but Krishna's will. And therefore, we will always remain peaceful in our devotional life. There's once a devotee from Africa who came to Mayapur, and he wanted to chant. He came to Mayapur and he started chanting like Haridas Thakur. So devotees went to Prabhupada and started glorifying that devotee. They told there's a devotee, now he's chanting like, I don't know exactly the details. He's chanting throughout his days. He's not staying in the temple. He's staying under the tree. And then they told, now he's staying on top of the tree. Like this, he started doing many, many things. And after some time, Prabhupada just waved his hand and he told, all this are Maya. The moment he thinks, I want to do, this Maya. So this is very important. Okay? Of course, we don't know what is the attitude of the devotee, but Prabhupada would know the actual attitude. So when we think that I am doing this, I am doing that, even though we are doing too many services, it's actually not really Krishna service, it's Maya service. We are serving ourselves. Okay? And this is why sometimes our mind starts telling us, oh, why am I not doing this? Why is he asked to do? Why they are asking me to do this? All these questions comes because we feel that I am the doer, not Krishna is the doer. Okay, so this is the third thing. And now we come to the last part. Krishna is the supreme deliverer of the living, of the devotees. Once there was a dense forest. In that forest, there was a huge cliff. And in one end of the cliff, there were two worms. They were standing there. And these two worms are very, very slow moving animal. And they live for very short lived. So even if they move to their entire life, they may move just a few meters or few tens of meters. Now one of the worm looked at the other worm and told, I have the desire to go to the other side of the cliff. And the other worm laughed at him. He told, it's just impossible. Even if you work throughout your life, you're not going to even go to the bottom of the valley. And that worm challenged. He told, no, I'm going to go and you see me. And then at that time, there was a very powerful lion standing beside the worm. It was just getting ready to jump across. And what this worm did was, he just climbed at the feet of the lion and catch hold of the feet. And the lion reached there, the worm just came down and he told, see, I'm here. So this is all about our devotional life. Okay. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi hi esha gunamai mama maya dugatiya. This material nature is so difficult to overcome. We cannot overcome it by ourselves and we have to just accept it. It's just impossible. But for Krishna to overcome the material world, it's nothing. Krishna can do it even easier than snapping a finger. So all that we need to do is catch hold to Krishna's feet and keep holding Krishna's feet. That's all. And Krishna will bring us across. And this point is stated by Lord Brahma in his prayers. Lord Brahma said, Samashriteye pada pallava plavam mahat padam punya yasho murare bhavam bude vatsa padam param padam 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 yat vipadam natesham. So Lord Brahma is telling, bhavam bude means the ocean of material world. The material existence is like a huge ocean. But for one who has taken shelter on the lotus Krishna, lotus feet of Krishna, samashrita ye pada pallava plavam, for them the entire material ocean will transform into vatsa padam, a small water contained by the hoof of a calf. So it's so small and it can easily cross over and attain param padam, the absolute supreme destination, Vaikuntha. And then he says, what's the description of Vaikuntha? Padam padam yat vipadam. It means every step there's danger, that is this world. Vaikuntha is natesham, this doesn't exist, which means there's no danger in any step. So this is the meaning of surrender, the idea of sharanagati, to be completely dependent on Krishna and not to think that we can deliver ourselves. And this is very important for a devotee to have this consciousness that the only means of deliverance is to take shelter of Krishna, not by any of our endeavors. Okay. Very often we find even among devotees, we worry about this fact, how the material nature is so difficult, how am I going to cross over? But we must understand that crossing over the material existence is Krishna's business, not really our business. Our business is simply to serve Krishna and engage in devotional service. Our concern should be only how to improve our devotional life, not how to cross over the material existence. And there's a very nice verse in Mukunda Mala Stotra, which is written by Kulashekar Alwar. Okay, in the verse number 12, he says, "Dear mine, do not bewilder yourself by anxiously thinking, how can I cross this fathomless and impassable ocean of material existence? There's only one who can save you, devotion. If you offer her to the lotus-eyed Lord, the killer of Narakasura, she will carry you across the ocean without fail." So this is important, because otherwise it's just another form of mental bewilderment. Our mind discourages us to think it's so difficult. What's the use of doing devotional service? We are not going to go across it. We should understand we are never going to be qualified to go across. It's only by Krishna's mercy. And for Krishna, it's very easy to deliver us. Okay, so this brings us to another two important points. First is, if Krishna is the one who's going to deliver us, then what is the need of our endeavor? Why should we do any endeavor? Krishna can just deliver us. Okay, so if we go back to the same example that I gave, we saw two worms were standing on one side of the cliff. But how many worms were able to cross? Only one. What happened to the other worm? No, it didn't cross. So that is the need for endeavor. Endeavor is simply an act of holding on Krishna's feet. It's a show of our eagerness. Because once we go back to Krishna, all we are going to do is devotional service. So if we are not endeavoring now, it simply shows we are not interested in this process of devotional service. And if we are not interested, Krishna won't deliver us because... Okay. Yeah, that's one thing, we won't fit the job description, Vaikuntha. And another thing, as Prabhu told, it is the concept of free will. We have our free will. Krishna is not a dictator. He won't force us. He wants us out. If we love him, we want him, he will deliver us. If we want to stay here and be under the shelter of Maya, he will make us remain under the shelter of Maya. Okay, the next question. We often hear Krishna's mercy is causeless. But here we see when we endeavor, Krishna showing his mercy. So, why do we call Krishna's mercy as causeless?
Is it because love is unconditional, and our love for Krishna, if that is not motivated by any kind of self-desires, Mm-hmm. Krishna immediately, that's what I feel, that he identifies it and he reciprocates. And he does not do it because he does not need to, he does not need anything from us. I mean, he has all the six opulences. So he doesn't need anything from us. All that he wants is love. And since that love is, if that love is unmotivated, so his mercy is also like, likewise, it's causeless. Because he doesn't need anything back. So.
Okay. Any others?
Whatever endeavor we are doing is not sufficient to attract Krishna's mercy.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that sense, it is causeless. He is still giving it, although it is nothing. So, it's just for our own good that we put some efforts, but he is still giving causeless from his point of view. It's nothing compared
to... That's my model answer also. Anyone?
My guru talks about this, how it's not that it's really causeless. I mean, we're actually, if we don't endeavor to do something, you just said, then, you know, we're not going to go back to Godhead if we're not interested. If you're interested, you act interested.
That's true. We have to endeavor. But Krishna's mercy is causeless. We always say Krishna's causeless mercy.
Yeah, they say that. But I think it was interesting what my guru was saying about it. I was wishing I could remember a little bit more. Uh-huh. But...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything is...
Mm-hmm. So our endeavor is definitely necessary, but it is not sufficient, and that makes a big difference. And that's why Krishna's mercy is causeless, because we might go on chanting. If he desires, he will not give us any mercy. It is his causeless mercy that he acknowledges it, but he need not acknowledge. There is no formula which will bind Krishna to give us mercy. So in that sense, it is causeless.
Okay. Yeah, actually, I was just thinking of telling whatever.
Philosophical discussion throughout the history of Christian tradition, at least. But I think it's a redundant statement because mercy implies giving more than we deserve.
Okay. Okay, can I? Quite possible. Okay, it was. All the answers are nice. I'll just go back to the same analogy. Just imagine that the worm climbed the lion's leg, and then the worm tells the lion, "Since now I'm holding your feet, you have to jump." What the lion will do? If the lion is not in a good mood, it will just crush the worm. So the point is, just because we are endeavoring, we cannot demand it from Krishna. As what everyone told, no amount of endeavor that we do is sufficient, is really sufficient to make us qualified to go back. It's Krishna's mercy alone that makes us qualified. Okay, so at no point we can think, now I've done enough. We can't go to Krishna and say, I'm chanting 5 hours per day, I'm reading 5 hours, I'm serving another 5 hours, and I'm hardly sleeping for 2 hours. Therefore, now you have to deliver me. Krishna will just laugh. So, no amount of endeavor is sufficient for us to go back, which will qualify us. It's only Krishna's mercy. So this is the two important points, that an endeavor is necessary, as Prabhu told, everyone told, because it shows our eagerness. If we are not endeavoring, it simply means we don't want Krishna. We are rejecting Krishna's mercy, and therefore Krishna won't force us. He's not a dictator to force us. If he wants, he gives. And second, Krishna's mercy is still costless because the endeavor that we are putting is doesn't oblige Krishna to bring us back. Okay, so, another point is what, as Chaitanya Mataji and Prabhu told, this shows the sweet relationship between living entities, the devotees and Krishna. It's not a trading. Devotees does it out of love, and Krishna delivers the living entities out of his own sweet will.
Devotee goes on serving. I mean, I'm just questioning this, you know, this sweet relationship. If there is no expectation, I mean, if Krishna is not obliged to reciprocate, that doesn't seem real sweet. I don't know. But the word dayabak means that if a devotee goes on, and isn't it the verse that if a devotee goes on performing devotional service and suffering all the reactions of his past, you know, good, bad karma, whatever, then he is entitled to go back to Godhead, that Krishna will take him back. That he's, in fact, it's almost that Prabhupada was saying that it's like a son inherits his father's property, practically like that, like it's an entitlement. So, I mean, I consider that more reciprocation, you know, like a true sense of being Krishna's, you know, Krishna's child or whatever, like that. So.
Actually, we are telling the same thing, just different language we are using. What I meant by not reciprocating is Krishna is not, like when we go to a shop, we pay money, the shopkeeper have to give us. Yeah, of course, but generally trading, if we pay something, then we get it back. But the relationship is not like that. Krishna has the ability not to deliver us even if we do everything. If he wants, he can, but he won't do that because he loves us. Does it make sense? Yeah, sure.
I'll just say that. So we are looking at different layers of truth, and one truth is the basis of other truth. So the child inherits a father's property is based on his father's love for his child, that he wants to give that property. So by default he loves his child and he wants to give the property, and that's why that truth holds. But as soon as father decides, no, I don't want to give, then that law will not apply because it's father's will. So both of them, all of them are corrected, all of them are true. It's just looking at different layers, and so we were talking philosophically, the root cause, the root basis is Krishna's sweet causeless desire, that this is how I want to arrange in this material world. I want to reciprocate this. And then once he has agreed on that, then there are sort of other rules coming up, that if you work, then definitely you will get liberation. But it is all based on Krishna's sweet desire, causeless mercy, that he wants to give mercy. So they're all true. They're all truths, but one truth is the basis of other truth. That's all.
Okay.
That Krishna is controlled by his devotee's love. I mean, but that's Krishna. It's not just this, you know, that conception of God. My guru often says that Krishna is not just, he's really a cowherd boy, but he's sort of playing as God, you know, pretending to be God for people that need to worship God. But he's really Krishna, and Krishna really is interested in loving relationships more than he's interested in a big power position, I think. I mean, Mother Yashoda is trying to bind him, but he's, you know, sort of playing with her. Not the rope is never long enough to completely bind, and then, you know, like
I'll
that.
Just add one thing and then...
Actually, Krishna is both. I mean, not only is he a cowherd boy being tied by his mother, but he's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's not just one-faceted, but he's multifaceted. He's the beginning and the end of everything. Everything is contained within Krishna. His supremacy as the Supreme Lord, and also his sweet relationships that he has with his pure devotees, they're all contained within the Lord. It's not that there's just this or the other. It's all of these things combined together within him, and still he remains complete. And so far as causeless goes, causeless means that there's no relativity to Krishna's activity. It's not that Krishna is obliged, but like Prabhu was saying, that it's out of his own sweet will, independently, because he's a person. He can choose one way or the other way. There's nothing that's forcing him to do. He does it according to his desire.
Thank you, Prabhu. And one more point I just want to add. The love for Krishna, like Yashoda's love, or any devotee's love for Krishna, is also given by Krishna. So that is Krishna's causeless mercy, that this devotee is having the love for Krishna. And simply by endeavoring, if Krishna doesn't give the mercy, one is not going to develop that love. So when we endeavor Krishna's sweet will, due to Krishna's sweet will, he gives us the attraction towards Krishna.
When Lord Ramachandra said, I cannot reject, who was it, that's the Rakshasa?
Vibhishana.
Vibhishana, because he came to me for shelter. I cannot reject him. So, you know, it seems like Krishna really is a loving God. I mean, if he isn't, then it's just that Christian conception, which isn't, you know, which is...
We are not saying Krishna will reject, will never reject. Okay, the fact is Krishna will never reject. Krishna always loves his devotees. Whenever a devotee does something, Krishna will reciprocate for certain. It's just that Krishna is not, there's no rule that binds Krishna. That's the only thing.
Oh, independent. Yes.
Yeah, Krishna is independent. That's the only point. Yeah. Therefore, his mercy is constant. Is it okay?
To me, it just seems like they work hand in hand. Because this one Christian told me, he was like, I don't see the need for, you know, doing all this worship and chanting because it's only by God's mercy, which is true, but why does he give that mercy to certain people? Because they have that endeavor. So mm-hmm. they work hand in hand. It's not that mercy is going to go, okay, so you don't have to do anything, so now you're going to get the mercy, and the person who's doing everything, he's not going to get the mercy. I don't think it works that way. It's hand in hand.
Yes. So. Yeah. Okay, we'll just conclude this. I have you want to say something, Prabhu? Okay. Whatever we are discussing now, Prabhupada explained it in the purport for 12.6 of Bhagavad Gita. You know, chapter 12, it begins with Arjuna asking Krishna, what is the best way of deliverance? And to serve you with bhakti yoga or by doing jnana, the process of impersonal. And Krishna says, both can deliver, but bhakti is the, by bhakti one can be delivered much easily. And then in the purport, Prabhupada said, he explains this concept of endeavor and Krishna's mercy. And can a devotee? Someone read this. F microphone. Yeah. I will try it. This is the first paragraph.
As stated before, the Supreme Lord can be appreciated only by devotional service. Therefore, one should be fully devoted. One should fix his mind fully on Krishna in order to achieve him. One should work only for Krishna. It does not matter in what kind of work one engages, but that work should be done only for Krishna. That is the standard of devotional service. The devotee does not desire any achievement other than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His life's mission is to please Krishna, and he can sacrifice everything for Krishna's satisfaction, just as Arjuna did in the battle of Kurukshetra. The process is very simple. One can devote himself in his occupation and engage at the same time in chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Such transcendental chanting attracts the devotee to the personality of Godhead.
Okay, so the main point here is this paragraph shows the endeavor of the devotee. And read the bolded line, Prabhu.
The devotee does not desire any achievement other than pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So, yeah, that is a very important statement. A devotee is not after something. His desire is simply to please Krishna. And then the next paragraph will explain what Krishna does to the devotees.
The Supreme Lord herein promises that without delay, he will deliver a pure devotee thus engaged from the ocean of material existence. Those who are advanced in yoga practice can willfully transfer the soul to whatever planet they like by the yoga process. And others take the opportunity in various ways. But as far as the devotee is concerned, it is clearly stated here that the Lord himself takes him. The devotee does not need to wait to become very experienced in order to transfer himself to the spiritual sky.
So here also Krishna is telling that a devotee will never become, we are not going to have the qualification, we are never going to come to a point where we can tell Krishna we are qualified. As Krishna, Prabhupada says, yes, a devotee need not wait to be experienced. Krishna will deliver.
The last one.
Okay. Yeah. Hare Krishna. So any questions?
Ramanujacharya had a wonderful disciple named Govinda,
And once people were glorifying him and they're saying, you are so wonderful, you have so many good qualities, and he said, yes, yes, I am wonderful. He agreed. So then people got confused and they went and complained to Ramanujacharya that how is a disciple? We were appreciating him and he's supposed to say, no, he's not. But he's saying, yes, I am. So he is very proud, it seems. So then Ramanujacharya asks his disciple, why are you behaving like this? Then he said, actually, Guru, I have this understanding that before I was like an animal. And since you picked me up, you have given me all this good quality. So it is your glory, so I am accepting your glories. So that's one way of displaying humility. I mean, we should not imitate it, but just following your example.